This is a dramatic turnaround from the last 4 months, where they were considered as the victims of an appalling crime. Now the McCanns are clearly being considered by police detectives here as potential suspects in the disappearance, perhaps even death, of their own daughter.
Primarily what we sought to do from the beginning is try and draw everything back to zero, if you like. Try and sort of take everything back to the beginning and then reanalyze and reassess everything, accepting nothing. The careful and critical analysis of the timeline has been absolutely key. Primarily, we're focused on the area between 8:30 and 10. We know that at 8:30, that was the time that Mr. and Mrs. McCann went down to the tapas area for their dinner, and we know that at around 10 p.m. that was when Mrs. McCann found that Madeline was missing.
Hello and welcome to Real Crime Profile. This is Jim Clementi, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor, and writer-producer on CBS's Criminal Minds. And with me today is...
Laura Richards, former head of the Homicide Prevention Unit at New Scotland Yard, criminal behavioral analyst, and founder of Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service.
And I am Lisa Zambetti, casting director for CBS's Criminal Minds, where Jim Clementi is my colleague. And here we go.
I would like to shift gears at this point because I think we're getting close to wrapping up our coverage of the disappearance of Madame McCann for now, because this is still an open case and things are still happening, and Operation Grange is still ongoing, hopefully doing some good investigative and scientific things. But there is a theory propounded that on August 3rd, that the McCanns took a trip to Spain, a driving trip. And there's a theory that Maddie may have been in the boot of that vehicle, that her body may have been in the boot of that vehicle. And to support this, some people talk about the fact that sometime after that, the boot was left open to air out, and that other people have noticed a smell, a strange smell coming from the boot of that car. As we've talked about before, a strange smell is not the same as the smell of death, the smell of human decay. That is something that people typically describe very succinctly as the smells like a body. As you mentioned, Laura, we both heard from and heard about a number of people who actually smelled the trunk of the car that Casey Anthony was driving around, and that members of her family and other people who knew nothing about the circumstance smelled what they called the smell of death. In this particular case, though, the McCanns reported that garbage had been transported in the boot of that car, and it could very well have been that something leaked and caused that smell in the car. I don't know what has been done to determine whether or not garbage was carried in that car, or why garbage would have had to have been carried in that car. It seems like a strange thing for somebody on vacation to put garbage in the boot of a rental car.
Particularly in a resort like that, yeah. Where people pick up the garbage, there would be no need to transport garbage, right. You would have thought.
However, the one thing that could maybe even account for even the cadaver dog hitting on that location is they had two little babies.
Oh, yeah.
And babies make diapers, and dirty diapers.
And they throw up. Both of those ends have lots of stuff coming out of
right.
them.
And the stuff is nasty. And I'm just going to make, that's a scientific determination. The stuff is nasty. And so it could very well have been just a diaper bag, for example, in the trunk of that car that was left in when it was hot out and could have created a massive smell. But I also wonder, because human poop comes out of a human, there are dead cells in there. I mean, that's part of what poop is made of. And I wonder if that would also cause a cadaver dog or blood dog to alert, because as we know, human poop can contain blood. It can contain the breakdown of bodily organs and
tissue,
and the,
yeah.
Yeah, and everything that you know we're made of. So I just wonder if there's ever been a test to determine whether or not a dog that's trained to alert on blood or trained to alert on cadavers would alert if there was some feces rotting in that location. Have you ever heard of anything like that, Laura?
I can't say I have, but let's put it out to our listeners. We may have experts from all around the world, and many of whom who hit us up and email us telling us how instructive our work's been for them in helping them with cases. Well, let's appeal to, if you're listening and you know anything regarding nappies and cadaver dogs and whether a study's been done, then, or diapers, as it's called in America, then let us know. We'd be interested to hear more about that. And I think, Jim, it was somebody who's a lawyer. It was a female lawyer who was living in proximity who saw the boot was open, or the trunk, as you call it, for days at a time. So, yeah, sometimes there could be a completely innocent reason for what's being seen. People don't realize the significance of things, or equally, it could just be something that's easily explainable. Mm-hmm. But for me, there are still a number of red flags when we're considering behavior. And I still hark back, why would Brian Kennedy say within week two of the missing person inquiry that the Maddie fund would be used for legal expenditure? I mean, that to me is a very strange thing to say at the start of something terrible happening. Why would you think you're going to be incurring legal bills?
I have a theory about that. And it's, again, the malleable nature of the English language, the impreciseness of the English language. He may have said that, meaning that we are going to employ lawyers to force the Portuguese to actually investigate this properly. It may not be what we've interpreted possibly as it's to defend us from legal action. And so I don't know what he meant, because nobody followed up. Nobody asked, well, what do you mean? What do you mean legal expenses? It would have been nice to find out. I mean, if you or I were there, or Lisa was there, we would have asked those questions.
Yeah, I mean, that's just such an important part of what was going on within those 2 weeks for them to think that would be required. You know, and the fact that Jerry and Kate said that they were shocked that they were made arguidos, well, I don't think that they should have been shocked, because if we know that children under the age of 4 are most at risk from those around them, surely they would expect, they're articulate, intelligent people, that they would have to be questioned. They would have to be people of interest to the Portuguese police right from the start. So there's just these points that, again, could be easily explained if you interview them and if you ask the right questions.
Right.
But of course, we've lost time now and traction. And, you know, as I mentioned before, I do think that they are very polished in how they're delivering their key messages. But of course, they've had advisors. And I believe Kate actually talked to that and said they were told not to show emotion and just to get facts across. But I'm going to balance it off in the round by saying you're damned if you do and damned if you don't at times, you know, and that's what they basically say, that either way they would have reacted. Then particularly the female tends to be criticized, and there's no normal in cases like this. Everybody is different and how they react, but certainly what is the anomaly is having so many people who are specialists and experts being flown over there in the very early stages of an ongoing investigation, which means that it became really about the British authorities versus the Portuguese. I mean, it seemed fairly combative right from the start rather than cooperative. So maybe that's what Brian Kennedy was alluding to in that statement, the very early stage. And maybe that's why Kate and Jerry went against all the Portuguese advice, which is not to talk to the media, which put more pressure on the Portuguese police, because people were saying, well, they're not making any statement, but they would never normally do anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's just full of cultural connotations and different procedures and practice that had Maddie sadly have happened anywhere else, perhaps things may well have been different.
Right. Maybe so
different outcome.
Right. So can we go back for a second about Guido? What the term Guido means is that they have become official suspects of the investigation, not just people of interest or not just somebody they're interviewing. So I can understand why the McCanns might be shocked that they were named official suspects, but they certainly should have expected to have been separated, interviewed, gotten detailed statements from, and hopefully then cleared. The fact that they were not cleared probably has something to do with the fact that that process didn't happen, and it didn't happen immediately. It should have happened immediately. But
they left the country as well. I mean, that's also another point, that straight afterwards they left the country, which on the one hand you can understand why, but on the other, the fact that they have never been cleared is the major problem with this investigation.
Yeah, and they took him out of El Guido status, but why that was, we don't really know. And what they actually think about them at this point, we don't really know, because it's just an open question.
Well, at 10 p.m., we can see a man walking down towards the sea, a white man in his 30s with brown hair. And in his arms is a child, 3 to 4 years of age, blonde hair, wearing pajamas. Very close description to that of Madeleine McCann.
I think it would be good for us to sort of do a roundtable about what we think actually happened in this case. And again, these are only theories. This is based on the information we know. We're not the investigators of the case. We're not the experts on this particular set of facts. But Laura and I are experts in this field. And Lisa, as she pointed out earlier, is actually an expert in behavior to a certain extent.
To a certain extent.
Sure. Yes. But what's important is that we don't have all the facts, obviously. We're not privy to the investigative files or the secondary investigation that's still going on in the UK. Operation Grain. Do you want to start, Lisa or Laura?
I'll start because mine is, okay, I'm sure, the worst one of all. But I find it disturbing that the McCanns were befriended by this Clement Freud while they were in Portugal, who turned out to be a child sex abuse offender. And something about that, just he was hiding in plain sight, and he befriended them, that rubs me in a weird way. But anyway, I think that she was abducted by more than one person. I think that there was probably a ringer somewhere in that complex, somebody who worked there, who noticed her and got help in secreting her away. That's what my gut says, that it's more than one person who took her.
Well, I think that is a reasonable possibility. I think that any environment where children are present on a regular basis is going to be a target-rich environment and will draw offenders to that location. So I think your instincts are very right about that. It could be what happened. The things that have come out about these men that are going around the neighborhood raising money for an orphanage that apparently didn't exist, that they're particularly talking about British orphans for some reason, this man that showed up at the door soliciting, and then the mother noticed that he was focused on her daughter, and then the very next day saw him in the house with her daughter uninvited, and then he took off. I think that kind of very risky behavior is the same kind of behavior that would have resulted in a stranger abduction of Madeleine McCann.
Yeah.
So the fact that something like that was happening in that neighborhood around that time, I personally believe increases the probability that Maddie was actually taken by a stranger. I don't know if it was a group. I don't see any indication of a group. I know that my experience, the likelihood of a group doing it is minimal compared to an individual doing it. Mm. Although individuals who might have a sexual interest in children, for example, will talk to each other. They will look for a sense of community. Although that's true, I have not seen that in terms of then doing an organized effort at abducting a child, especially in a high profile way like this. Although there are child trafficking issues around the world, although there are incredibly sophisticated organized crime rings that actually do that kind of stuff, it's typically not the wealthy child that will actually set off all the alarms that falls prey to those kinds of organizations. It's typically the unseen, the unheard, the poor, the marginalized people that become victims of that kind of a group. So in my professional opinion, and based only on what I know, although there are a bunch of red flags, I think, in both in the McCann's behavior and in the circumstances that followed the post-offense behavior, I think that the highest probability is that somebody came in from the outside, somebody who had, like you said, Lisa, observed their behavior, saw that they periodically left these kids alone and took advantage of that opportunity and took her. They would have had to have gotten some distance away at that point. And unfortunately, as we've seen in so many cases, young children that small are very easily concealed. They're very easily disposable.
Well, that's why I think it was at least two people. I think one person was the lookout, the other person grabbed her, and then one of them drove away with her. But that's
possible. It's possible. And Laura?
It's possible. All these things are possible, but there's no evidence.
Yeah.
And that is the problem, that everything else is just supposition. It's just pure speculation. I do think that there's really only two things that may have occurred. And one is that, and you've talked about it, either someone took her, a predator, and so the other offences are very important, or she died in the apartment. It's an incomplete investigation. That's the problem that we're facing. It's an incomplete investigation, not just because of the forensics. And bear in mind, from what I've seen and heard, there's no evidence of other people having been in that apartment. I haven't heard about any profiles of individuals. So there seems to be an absence of evidence when talking about somebody else coming into the apartment. But the second part to that is, well, what about the phone analysis and computers and tablets? You know, it's an incomplete investigation because there's been no telephone analysis. And what has been done has been very limited. So Mark Sornokanoka talks about that a bit on his podcast, although I think, again, how things are interpreted on the podcast are problematic. But phone data always tells you a lot, and cell site analysis and computers, who was messaging whom. There's no evidence of either. There's no evidence of people saying they saw people hanging around. For you, your theory, Lisa, of the lookout, in that area in particular, yes, we know that there were sightings, and Jim, yes, the orphanage charity workers, in inverted commas, needs to be bottomed out. And I do think the 28 sex attacks on children within a 40-mile radius being missed is a disaster for an investigation like this in the early stages. The man who broke into the apartment with the 7-year-old and the surgical mask lying next to her, that would need to be bottomed out. But of course, there's a time distance issue now. And then the other man who broke in and was stood over, are they all the same individual? We don't even know that.
Right.
The fact that the Portuguese police put out an e-fit that was just an oval circle with no facial features, no hair, sums up the investigation to me at the early stages. Have you seen this man? And unsurprisingly, no one has seen an oval face with no facial features and no hair. And that
I'm
really...
I'm sorry for laughing, but it is so absurd. I have never... in my entire criminal career and post-career, ever heard of another case in which the outline of a face, the gross circle or an oval, period, with absolutely no features, was ever used as, quote, a law enforcement's, you know, composite sketch. I mean, it's just outrageous to do that. What did they hope? What did they hope would come from that?
Nothing. I mean, nothing came back from it because nobody could say anything of significance relating to it. But that sums up this investigation to me. All these golden opportunities at the early onset, the start, the starburst, have been missed. And therefore, it's almost impossible to recover that time. So you know, anything that we you can say about what you think happened is just purely speculation, because there's no evidence of either it was an abduction, which is what the McCanns said right from the start, and that's been in the narrative, or with Amaral at the other end of the spectrum saying that she died in the apartment, albeit one thing that I do place weight in is the dogs alerting Eddie and Keela, and I do place weight in Eddie alerting and seeing how he alerted. But that alert, again, is just that. It's an alert. It's not evidence in and of itself.
And we don't know who that alert was actually resulting from.
Right. But if we believe that no one died in that apartment, so everything is based on something else. If we believe that nobody else passed in that apartment, but the dogs alerting in the same places, the fact that they do that in 13 places is instructive. But again, it's instructive in the sense that they believe something did happen in there, but who knows exactly what it is, because we still don't know exactly what the crime is that's being committed here. So I hope that in one sense, Operation Grange does do the age progression of what Madeline would look like at age 16, because I think
we're holding out the hope that she could be still alive.
Yes.
Right. And so you've got to be optimistic, but I think there's a high, and the fact that the last age progression was when she was 9 years old, and I mean the official age progression. So I would like to see the age progression now of her 16 years of age. But in the same breath, I do think there's a very high probability that Madeline is dead. And the fact that nobody has sighted her, the fact that no one has, or the sightings that there have been, have drawn blanks. And of course, at this stage, it can be a wild goose chase of traveling all over the world, which is really what's happened. And I think it's very unfortunate that the Madeline Fund has been, I believe, misused at times. And why I say misused at times is that all sorts of people pop out of the woodwork if they think that there's money in the offing. And I do think that on some occasions they've been led astray. Oh, yeah. And a lot of money has been spent in the wrong areas. And I think that is, for me, I hate that level of exploitation, that money should have been used as a force for good, and yet it's been used.
Quasi-experts on quasi-investigators on thugs and criminals. When you have a investigator basically admit to torching someone's car because they thought they were a suspect, it's just outrageous. Outrageous.
Right. But what about the boss of Matedo 3, Jim, who basically said Christmas that she'd be home before Christmas? I mean, and based it on nothing. Zero evidence or information and getting people's hopes up. What did he hope to achieve from that?
Well, it was ignorant and it was cruel. And unfortunately, it happened. But there are people out there who are frauds. Just let's call it what it is. There are people out there who are frauds who, like you said, smell money and they just get greedy and they do whatever they have to do to try to get that money. And it's outrageous. And, just like in other notorious cases where children have been victimized, they don't give a damn about the kid. And thankfully, there are people like us. There are people who are dedicated professionals who do actually care about children and try to give victims their voice back. This is what we've attempted to do in this process, covering the case of the disappearance of Madeline McCann. And we hope that one day this case will be resolved, that we will know what happened. And the best of all worlds, Madeline will come back and she'll be alive.
You know, we journalists like to think of ourselves as a force for good, and we very often are. But in this case, a lot of misinformation was reported. And on a positive note, guys, there is still hope for Madeline McCann. Remember, JC Dugard was found after 18 years. She can still be found.
And before we sign off, just because I know that Mark does listen to our coverage of his podcast, you know, despite his use of Pat Brown and maybe some other flaws that we found in the Maddie podcast, I really found it riveting. I loved the visual detail of this audio podcast. And as Laura says, if a picture paints 1,000 words, I think this podcast's words painted a million pictures for me. It really just submerged me in a really wonderful way into this world and was very instructive to me. So I wanted to thank Mark for the Maddie podcast. I do think that he is coming at it from a place of trying to give her voice and try to find an answer for her disappearance.
Yeah, I'll agree. I think they did cover a number of things that were not covered by the documentary series. I think that he actually went further than a number of people, and he is trying to get the actual investigation to use the experts that have volunteered to do work for free. And that is a great thing. And I'm glad he's doing that. Although my interpretation of the podcast is that it's very conspiratorial and quite opinionated in its coverage, and sometimes, unfortunately, relies on quasi-experts and not on people that actually do have expertise in that field. So, you know, for example, just one other thing that really, really got me upset was when they had an investigative expert who talked about transfer DNA in their career not being an issue that came up much in their career, when that career must have been dated 20 years because for the last 20 years, transfer DNA has been an issue, has come to play in major investigations, both in the United States and around the world, and will always be an issue until technology can actually determine how long it's been there, where it actually came from, and so forth. But right now, transfer DNA is not only detectable, but it can give you some false leads.
It can. Well, that probably talks to that individual's lack of experience in many respects. Mm-hmm. But what I also liked about Mark's podcast, he made the point about Occam's razor. And just because we've been wrapping up with, you know, hypotheses and the theory, certainly in my career, and I can only talk about, you know, and all of this is about our opinion, Jim and I just weighing in with our opinion. We haven't cited all of the official reports in this case. So that is a very clear caveat. But Occam's razor is the simplest explanation is normally the best explanation. And that's certainly what I've found in most of the cases that I've worked, that sometimes we come up with all these complex and complicated potential scenarios of what may have happened. But actually, we overthink it. We try and match these things together, but most often it's the simplest explanation. And that's why I agree with you, Jim, the moving of the body multiple times and so on and so forth. I haven't seen that in many cases. That's not to say it didn't happen here, but I would think that it's highly unlikely at the time where all eyes and people are actively looking, who's going to run that risk at that time? That just does not make sense. And two other things that I just wanted to make recommendations for our listeners about. One is I talked about the Rachel Nickell case. If you do have an interest in that case, I highly recommend a book called The Last Thursday in July, which is a book written by Andre Hanscom. And it's a memoir of Rachel Nickell and what happened. And I read that book when I first started at New Scotland Yard. I can picture it in the bookcase at New Scotland Yard in the unit, my sexual offences section that I worked in. And I think our listeners would find it very interesting. And I'm pleased that there has been a resolve. And now her son, Alex, has spoken out about the case too. Robert Napper really was a serial sexual predator. He preyed and stalked hundreds of women and broke into their homes. Again, he was found peeping and being predatory within his home environment towards his sister and his mother, and they alerted police about his behavior when he was prepubescent. And he continued through puberty and hundreds of offences, and therefore him to be missed in the initial investigation is very problematic.
Absolutely.
So please, if you have any information about the disappearance of Madeleine McCann, even if you're not sure if you saw something or heard something or know something, it's still probably very vital for Operation Grange to hear from you. You know, I think I don't know if we're ever going to know whatever happened to her. I wish that Cuddle Kitty could talk, because that's probably the only person or object that knows really what happened to her, you know, other than the offenders. But reach out to Operation Grange if you have any information.
And the contact details for Operation Grange will be in our show notes, along with the contact details for the PJ. So please, as Lisa said, have a look at the show notes and email or call either of those lines if you have any further information about Madeleine McCann. So for now, this is us concluding our coverage of the disappearance of Madeleine McCann. Should new information come to light, then, or any questions that you have, then we may well revisit. So for now, our thoughts are with Madeleine McCann. This is Real Crime Profile, signing out.
If you like our podcasts, there are a few things you can do. You can take 2 minutes and go to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review. You can also check out all Real Crime Profile offers and promotions and our sponsors in our show notes. Another thing you can do is go to Facebook and like our Facebook page, and you can also follow us on Twitter at Real Crime Profile without the E. And one last thing, please tell your friends, family and colleagues about us and spread the Real Crime Profile word. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate all of our listeners.
Real Crime Profile is produced and edited by Paul Francis Sullivan. Sound engineering by Mike Thal. Music is composed by Simba Tsumba. Logo art by Jim Clementi. Real Crime Profile is produced by XG Productions and distributed by Wondery.
For advice and support if you're experiencing stalking in the UK, you can contact Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service on 0203 866 4107. Or you can go to the website where there's a lot of information and advice that you can follow on www.paladinservice.co.uk. If you're experiencing domestic abuse, you can call the National Domestic Violence Helpline for free on 0800 2000 247. In the US, if you're experiencing domestic abuse and need advice, shelter or counselling, you can call Genesis, the 24-hour hotline, on 214 946 4357. You can also go to their website for further advice or support, www.genesisshelter.org. And there's the domestic violence hotline on 800 799 7233.